Hi, I'm Steve Thompson, the CEO of Johns Hopkins Medicine International.
And I'm Elizabeth Tracy. Welcome to this month's podcast. That's for the month of May, Steve. Almost June here in Baltimore.
Time is moving fast.
It is indeed. Let's start with your blog post. The first one we're going to talk about was actually posted on April 26th. In it, you talk about something that I think is really fascinating, this idea that can we have low-cost healthcare that's delivering good value? And are we so emphasizing low cost that we're going to let that value go out the window?
What I wrote about that was interesting to me is whenever we talk about the value equation, cost inevitably comes in. And one of the things that I think that's been missing from the discussion is really a clear understanding of what the cost actually is. For most of us, we don't know, and as consumers, we don't really care, in as much as at the time of making a decision, we don't say, oh, well, how much is this going to cost, or could I get it cheaper? That's certainly changed recently with the release of charge information, which is very different than what I've just been speaking of, but on a comparative basis, looking at charges. So it all feeds into that notion of what is the value.
Well, help me out. What is the difference between value then and cost?
The main difference is that value is an important way that we look at goods and services that we buy. And the cost relates to some benefit that we perceive or actually experience. So the relationship of that cost to the benefit is how we ascribe value to anything, no different in healthcare. One of the things, though, that strikes me, and I'm speaking from personal experience now, there's not anything in my life that I buy that I don't know how much it actually costs. And that comes to me at some point, but at the time I'm making a decision, it doesn't come in there. And what I'm saying is that absent that clear understanding of cost, the notion of what the value of healthcare is sometimes elusive.
So how do we integrate this, especially in these emerging markets?
In the emerging markets, it sometimes is different because in many emerging markets, there's not a high level of medical insurance. So it is a cash business, and people do make rational decisions based on whatever information they have at the time. Cost information, they weigh the trade-off of buying a healthcare service versus buying gasoline for their car and other things. So the dynamic is a little different. One of the other components of this that I've talked about is that a way to introduce the fullness of the value equation is the skin in the game notion, where I actually need to understand how much it costs to fully realize the value.
But yet, we can't just use cost as the predictor of whatever it is, especially in healthcare, that we're either hoping to receive or have received.
I guess what I was trying to get at in my blog is really the black eye that U.S. healthcare gets, particularly because it is always couched as a percentage of GDP, which is a number that's way too big. So cost is one component. The outcomes, the benefits are clearly the other notion in this value equation that the U.S. has a very good experience with.
So we have to integrate all of these factors.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's turn then to the blog post of May 20th. An interesting vignette that gets offered, and that's about baby formula and what baby formula shortages might be telling us about healthcare.
In some respects, that particular vignette was of interest to me because it really typifies the globalization of healthcare, how something literally on the other side of the world from those of us on the East Coast of the U.S. can actually have an impact, and an impact in a way that it's not 6 degrees of separation, it's much closer than that, about how world markets do impact healthcare. And we think about it in other ways. We think about it most often with respect to oil prices and gasoline at the pump prices. So we've come to understand the volatility is somehow related to the world consumption, world supply. But we haven't really thought about that in the case of healthcare until this particular aspect was brought up.
So let's describe some more about that.
The issue behind the topic arose when there was some concern about the safety and the way that some baby formula was constituted in China. And as a big supplier, removing that, or in many respects, consumer movement away from that aspect of the supply, created the situation where people are looking at alternative sources for baby formula. And since the production of baby formula is relatively fixed, taking out a big component of the supply in one fell swoop creates this mismatch in the market, driving prices up and driving access or availability down.
And so how does that pertain to healthcare?
We tend to think of healthcare really as a local issue. But recognizing even within that attention to local availability, there are going to be worldwide influences that have a direct impact. The baby formula is sort of a commodity in many people's minds aspect, but the bigger one that's related to these global fluctuations or availability has to do with workforce. And we've talked about that before too, about how the availability of nurses and doctors in the worldwide workforce and how they move and where they're located really does impact the availability of healthcare and the quality.
And so I believe that in this particular blog post, you suggested that because a lot of the folks in China now have greater resources, they may travel to access healthcare if they don't trust the healthcare that they can receive locally.
Right. We've seen that in other markets, and usually it's attributed to what demographers call the emerging middle class, because these are people with increasing amounts of discretionary money and being able to discern levels of quality within healthcare. And then when they don't see it locally, they're willing to expend their resources to go get it. All the numbers coming out of China are big. A 1% change in the size of the middle class or people with discretionary income really has a tidal wave in many respects of movement. And we see, particularly in the People's Republic of China, people moving in ways that they didn't before. Many people are traveling to Hong Kong and to other parts of Southeast Asia for healthcare as that begins to open up. Less so beyond that for any significant numbers, but it's happening.
Very interesting. So it sounds like an opportunity then to help purvey trustworthy local sources.
It is. Sort of in another part of the world, I think that they're well down the path, and that is in the Gulf region. There has been a history of committing resources and working to improve healthcare delivery in the Gulf. It's driven by a lot of things, but one aspect really is the trust that people place in the local healthcare system, or more appropriately, the lack of trust. So rebuilding that through an investment improvement of healthcare and how we work with partners to do that is the ultimate goal.
So finally, let's turn to one that was posted on May 21st, and that there's an acronym BRICS that you cite in there. So let's hear more about that.
This is a Goldman Sachs acronym that has been around for a long time to try and create a little coherence around a lot of changes in the global environment. BRIC or BRICS, there's a slight difference in them, refers to some economies that have been really on fire. BRICS, B-R-I-C or B-R-I-C-S, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and some have included South Africa as the S. These are economies, obviously, in very different parts of the world, but who were, in the eyes of the analysts at Goldman, experiencing similar dynamics with their market growth. Out of that comes, again, people having more disposable income, people becoming more educated, being able to discern, and desiring higher quality goods and services. So really a driver, and the healthcare sector is really driven in the same way.
But now we're looking at a different group of folks where it seems like there's this economic growth.
Right. So now some of those BRICS are not golden BRICS as they maybe once were. So now looking more broadly at an increasing number of countries that are experiencing growth, largely around development of natural resource sectors. I'm thinking of developing economies such as Peru, Chile. Brazil is still in that group, certainly. South Africa, it's just an expanded group. It seems to be a natural progression as these economies develop, both in the public sector and the private sector, more resources get directed towards the development of healthcare, education, and other services.
So it sounds like a great opportunity then.
It is, and we see it as an opportunity, but we also see it from the standpoint of being able to marry the expertise and the knowledge that we've accumulated within Johns Hopkins, making that available to, again, both public and private sector parties who are desirous of creating quality infrastructure in their own countries.
Very good. That's this month's podcast. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Steve Thompson, the CEO of Johns Hopkins Medicine International, bringing the best of academic medicine to the world.